Game over, man. Game over.
You're gonna need a bigger potion.
Why so serious?
I am Iron Man.
This is a tasty burger.
Welcome to the In Session Film Podcast.
Welcome to this podcast review for June 1st, 2023. I am JD Duran, and I am very excited for this conversation because I am being joined by one of our lovely voices over at Women in Session, Amy Thomason, joining me for this. Amy, welcome to the show.
It is an honor to be on the main show and meet you and to talk about this movie that I've been waiting for since I was in fifth grade.
Oh wow! Okay, yeah, because that was honestly one of the first questions I wanted to ask you before we jump in. What is your relationship to the animated film, The Little Mermaid?
The movie came out when I was in fifth grade, and I'm not going to say her name, but I remember the friend I saw it with, and
okay.
I fell madly in love with this movie. And okay. I agree with people saying that it sort of kicked off the Disney Renaissance.
Yeah.
And it, because I had gone to Disney World for the first time that summer before it came out. And I remember they had MGM Studios and you could see the drawings for the movie. And when I was little, I was like, wait, did this already come out? I hope it didn't. It's a movie about a mermaid and she looks so beautiful. And then I saw it in the theater and I went to see it three times as a child. And it just knocked me off my feet, swept me away. I bought the video when it came in those clamshell.
Sure.
Yeah. How old I am. It was 1989. And I just wanted to be a mermaid. I thought Eric was so handsome. The music was amazing. The animation, which when you're little, you don't think about those details, but it was a magical film.
Yeah, it is a really good film. So before I give my thoughts on it, I also wanted to ask you this, because this last week on the show, episode 536, we did our power rankings for the Renaissance era. And so you're pretty high on The Little Mermaid. Is it like in your top three? Top two? Like, where does it rank for you in the Renaissance era?
The Renaissance era?
Yeah.
I would definitely say number one.
Your favorite? Okay.
With Aladdin is a very close number two.
Okay.
I'm going to get a lot of hate for this, but I'm being honest. Even as a child, when I saw The Lion King, I didn't really like it.
Oh, okay.
It's a beautiful film. But as far as how it connected to me, it left me a little cold.
Interesting.
And Beauty and the Beast I didn't see till I was in about middle school. And it's cute. I understand why other people love it. But The Little Mermaid, I wanted to live The Little Mermaid. I wanted to be a mermaid.
Okay.
I wanted to be beautiful and swim in the ocean and have little fish friends. And with Aladdin, I wanted to be on that magic carpet.
There you go. All right. That is very exciting to hear. I'm also a big fan of The Little Mermaid. I really do like it, especially given the context of when it came out, because the three films that preceded it is, we'll say, not some of Disney's best work. And it just had a very different feel comparatively. And you could tell that Disney was moving into a new era. I really do like it. I don't know, and this is what's interesting about hearing other people's perspectives, because I can say pretty confidently, I don't know if I've ever heard anyone say that they had a cold reaction to The Lion King. I mean, that is fascinating.
And I saw it more than once, and this is when I was little. And I just remember, I remember I saw it with my friend. I saw it with her two younger brothers. I remember we saw it at the Hawthorne Movie Theater. All those memories I have. Yeah. And the opening up into of the Circle of Life up until when it flashes, boom, The Lion King. It's the best part of the movie.
It is one of the best openings.
After that, it's all kind of downhill. And I think some of this, I feel like I didn't like young Simba. And when he sang, thought he sounded like young Michael Jackson, and it kind of annoyed me. And I love young Michael Jackson 5, but there were just little things about it. I was like,
Yeah, well, that's fascinating. I'm the only
person alive who has that perspective. I feel...
And that's great. No, I love... That's... Yeah.
I have to love that movie.
Yeah, definitely love hearing others. It's certainly my favorite of the Renaissance era. I have a very, very different reaction to it. And it's interesting. I talked about this briefly on 536 because that was the first of the Renaissance era that I saw in theaters. I was 4 when The Little Mermaid came out. I was Beauty and the Beast. I was 6. I don't think my parents saw me as having interest in those. So I certainly caught those up with later. But I think, you know, in their minds, they're like, Lion King, 9-year-old boy. Yeah, sure, we can make that happen. So I did see The Lion King in theaters. It destroyed me. And then it was interesting because the first time I saw it again as an adult was on my birthday in like 2018. My oldest had like set up this like home theater little thing as like a little birthday surprise. And that's the movie that he chose for us to watch. And then watching it through the eyes of a father, especially in that setting, yeah, it absolutely obliterated me.
Was this his first time watching it?
No, he had seen it a couple of times. And I was aware that he had seen it, but I was, you know, kind of purposefully trying to stay away because I knew what that film would do to me. But I couldn't say no to that. Like, I couldn't say no to watching it in that setting. So,
children.
Yeah, I know. So it's fun to kind of get both of those, like have that film embedded into my brain from like two very different perspectives like that. But anyway, we're not here to talk about that. We're here to talk about The Little Mermaid, which is directed by the remake, that is, Rob Marshall. It stars Halle Bailey, Jonah Howard King, Davy Diggs, Awkwafina, Jacob Tremblay, and many others that come and go throughout this film. So with all of that laid out on the table, Amy, tell me, what did you think of Rob Marshall's The Little Mermaid?
I really loved it. I thought it really brought me back to the original. And I think that's what's magical about it, is that grown-ups remember seeing it. And then, of course, the theater was filled with little munchkins. And hearing their enjoyment of it, what better experience to have than to share that with a child? All of the issues within the brouhaha about the casting a person of color to play Ariel, mermaids aren't real. I don't mean to break it to everybody in the audience at home, but mermaids are not real.
Yeah.
And she was beautiful and she was lovely and she was a beautiful singer. And I loved that. I thought the prince was very good. Less of a stud than the animated one. I do have to say that the animated one was a little bit of a stud. And he did the job. Jacob Tremblay was good. Davy Diggs, who I love. You're not going to beat the original. He was very good, but it's hard. That was the only character that I thought didn't reach the same heights as the original.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair.
The original Sebastian has passed. Mm-hmm. We miss you. We love you. He was so funny.
Mm-hmm.
I thought Melissa McCarthy was very good as Ursula.
Okay.
She was, and I know I'm looking through all my notes.
No, it's fine. I love it.
The Scuttlebutt song.
Yeah.
Not such a fan of that.
Okay.
Yeah. Of that. And then Eric's song was, why are we having this song in here? I was watching the movie and I thought, when I rewatch this movie with my children, this is going to be a part that I fast forward.
Okay. Interesting.
It doesn't hold up to the rest of the score.
Okay. I think that's very fair. On the whole, though, I am very much with you. I really did like this movie. I think it is one of the better remakes in Disney's canon since they've been remaking a lot of these movies. And I think what I love about it, it kind of comes down to a couple of different things. One, we mentioned Halle Bailey. She is electric in this film. I think she's really great. She can freaking sing. I think as far as capturing the essence of that character, I think she does a really great job. And surprisingly, I did not anticipate this, but I think she does a really good job in her performance of tapping into the same innocence and almost, it's very reminiscent of that initial performance in some ways, but she brings her own identity to it as well, that I really like. So for me, it kind of bridges that gap of, you know, tapping into nostalgia and pandering to that in a little way, in some ways, while also kind of being its own. So I loved her performance. And for me, I think much of this film begins and ends with that. And where we will differ a little bit, because what I've liked about these remakes mostly is the additions that are brought to them. Now, I know that when they're wanting to remake these from Disney's perspectives, you know, they want to pander to that nostalgia because that's what people love about the animated films. And it's certainly why many people go to see it. And that's certainly fair. But when I look at, you know, something like Peach Dragon, for example, to me, that film is almost nothing like its predecessor. To me, it's very charming, really well made, and one of the better films. Beauty and the Beast, I did not like very much, but what makes me frustrated with that movie is I think it had great potential because the additions they bring to it, especially with Kevin Kline's character, I thought was excellent. Like I could have used a whole movie around that. And while it's not the best movie, technically speaking, Mulan might be my favorite of them all simply because it is nothing like the animated film, nothing at all like the animated film, which I do love, but I appreciate that. While it taps into the bare bones narrative of Mulan, it has its own thing. And this is more in lines, I think, of like Cinderella in the sense that, yes, a lot of this film will feel familiar. It very much follows the formula, but the additions that are brought to it, I did really like. So the new song from Prince Eric that you mentioned, I think what I like about it, from a musicality standpoint, I do like what it's doing there, but more so on an emotional and perhaps a thematic level, what I like about this comparatively to the animated film is that it gives us a little bit more insight into the yearnings of Eric, which I do think is missing in that original film. And understandably, they're trying to tell, you know, a story with lore and, you know, character in 90 minutes. This has expanded out to be like, what, 2 hours and 15 minutes, something along those lines. So this is certainly a little bit longer, but I do like that they're expanding beyond that to give us something with Eric in terms of his wants and his needs and the idea that what he's yearning for is very similar to Ariel. So when the romance comes, we have an understanding that the roots of both of those characters fundamentally come from the same place. So when the romance is sparked, to me, there's like equal weight to it. And that balancing act, I think, is really good. So, and I think the film does a good job of doing that outside of that song. But I think the addition of that song from Eric gives perhaps more weight to it than some of the other stuff they do. But on the whole, yeah, with you. I do like it, even if we like it for somewhat different reasons.
Well, and I agree. I liked the depth that they gave the character and how they had a lot more time together to sort of build their relationship. Yeah. It was very sweet and almost like they were talking to each other, even though she couldn't speak. There was a lot more built in to their relationship.
Yeah.
And they had a lot more moments of being silly. And when they come in their day and they're running in, like they escaped and they're both kind of hiding and they're giggling and looking at each other.
Yeah.
Those moments were wonderful because it definitely
really great.
A lot more chemistry and a lot more playfulness that we don't always get to see in Disney movies. It's always, oh, they're the love of my life, and that's it. Sure, and I would die, I would give up my voice and
yeah,
all of that for you. And this made it seem more real. They had those little silly moments. They had those serious moments. And I love that the depth of when he saw the fake Ariel and how
yeah.
he was so conflicted. It wasn't just so, oh, no, that's her. Okay.
Yes.
Goodbye, Ariel. How it was much more, wait yeah. a minute. Hang on a second. This might have been the person that saved me, but what about this girl that I've really have this connection to? And I like that it, yeah. it gives Eric a lot more depth
yeah.
than just being the hot prince. I really appreciated that. I also loved the more of the depth that they gave Ursula with her story that you didn't get in the first movie. And she talks yeah. about back in the day, I was a part of all of this.
Yes.
And I'm going to get it back. And yeah. Melissa McCarthy, I followed her since she was on Gilmore Girls. And I love her career. I love that on that show, she was, it seemed, sometimes it's painful to rewatch that show. And I loved that show when it was on. And I loved it for a couple of years after it was on. But I felt like she was the token overweight best friend of Lorelai. And I love that. Now, Melissa McCarthy, she has 2 Oscar nominations now, and she's making these blockbuster movies because Bridesmaids yeah. and Can You Ever Forgive Me? And she's making these blockbuster movies, comedy, yeah. smaller dramas. Good for her.
Yeah.
Good for yeah. her. And the makeup was amazing, and the cinematography, because it was so dark and you could sort of see her pale face. Mm-hmm. through
yeah
and I loved it because it made her so mysterious because she was constantly moving and popping up in sure. different places in the dark, and I loved that. I loved how that was filmed.
Yeah, I really liked Melissa McCarthy here as well, and you're right, I mean typically we think of her as the charming, funny protagonist or one of the side characters in a lot of her films, and I do love that here she somewhat deconstructs that charm and flips it on its head to become this, you know, kind of intimidating antagonist, which is one of the better villains in the Renaissance era, or really in all of Disney's films, right? Ursula is one of the greats. And I think she does a great job of embodying why Ursula is very good, especially given some of the new context that we get as you're talking about, without ever overdoing it, though. I think she does a really great job of just kind of reining in and like keeping it simple. And that simplicity, I think, goes a long way because it doesn't distract from what is the beating heart of this film, and that's the romance between Ariel and Prince Eric. And I do agree with you. I mentioned I like the new song from Eric's perspective, but beyond that, yes, there's a lot of scenes where we just see them interacting and just gazing into each other's eyes, like they're having a conversation, even though Ariel isn't verbalizing anything. And that to me, I do think is important because I have read some criticism. In fact, I believe this was brought up on the show this last weekend that the Little Mermaid could be interpreted as maybe being a little, I don't know if superficial is the right word, but you know, it's the thing of, well, she doesn't have her voice, so the only thing that can attract Eric to her is her beauty. And so then it just becomes a thing about beauty, which then ironically Disney would then subvert a few years later with Beauty and the Beast, funny enough. And here, and I don't know if this was intentional or not. I don't know. I haven't read into it too much to know if this was top of mind for Rob Marshall and his team here. But I do think it's fascinating that they do avoid that by giving Eric not just his depth, but again, that the time for that relationship to kind of flesh out and for that romance to blossom in a way where we know that it has little to do with her outward beauty. And of course, you know, Halle Bailey is beautiful, but that's not what's the driving force behind that romance. It is those two characters and the yearning they both have individually that when they collide, there's a genuine spark there that I think is really great. So I do think from a storytelling perspective, they handle that very well.
And they took that part out of Ursula's song, which I will say, the reason why that character is such an iconic villain, she has the show-stopping number.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Souls is a capital G, great.
Yes, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I can't think of a better villain song off the top of my head.
The one in Hunchback of Notre Dame, I think, is really great.
Oh, the one that reminds me of Sweeney Todd. Hello, musical theater people at home. Judge a song from Sweeney Todd, which is what my musical theater friend said. Got together, we're like, he's a little bit of the judge from Sweeney Todd.
Yeah,
he's a little creepy.
And being the Lion King guy, I mean, I will always go to bat for Scar. I do like his song as well. But it's up there. No, like, no matter how you rank them, like, yeah, that song and Ursula, very much up there.
It's different. And I do like, I almost called it the judge's song, Frollo's song. But to me, Poor Unfortunates is a showstopper. It really, it's just great. And you sing along to it and it's just wonderful. One thing that I feel a lot of people are unfairly picking on about The Little Mermaid, it's a lot of this is also coming from the original story. I don't know. Does anyone read? I, of course, have read the original story because I'm a huge nerd. But that's literally the story, is she does give up her voice. Have you read the story?
No, I haven't, but I am very aware that that's what takes place.
That she dies at the end and becomes part of the seafoam because the prince does not fall in love with her. Yeah. It's so sad, but it's a Hans Christian Andersen. So thank goodness that they changed that. But you can't have that story without that in it. That's such an integral part of what that story is.
Oh, I agree.
So
I don't think that Disney should have, you know, like re-engineered that necessarily. What I like about what they do here, as we've been talking about, is they give a little bit more depth to these characters and give more time for that romance to blossom. You know, like the scene when they're going through the market there, or you know, the scene on the horse, as silly as that is, or anything in the castle. Like, we just get these moments, like in that room when they're like, she's like going through all the things and he's talking about the maps and all of that. Mm-hmm. Like those kind of moments like, I just love that the film allows that relationship to breathe and you really do feel the chemistry between those two characters. So none of it feels forced. It doesn't feel like it's coming from a hollow place or a superficial place. It comes from a genuine place of the yearning of these two characters and in what's at stake for both of them emotionally. Like, I think the film does a really good job of getting that right. So by the end of the film, I don't think anyone's thinking about the potential controversy that, you know, it's her voice or whatever. I think this film does a really good job of handling that.
And that, exactly. She wins his love, not just through her looks, but through her curiosity.
100%. Yeah.
And she's charming. She is
very
charming and lovely. And how she was able to emote with just her face. You saw her. And I love how she's pointing and she's looking at him all curiously. Like, no, tell me more. Tell me more. And she's more than lovely, but she's just got, you can tell she's got this burning spirit inside of her. And that's why he loved her. And when the other woman, the fake Ariel, shows up and she's gorgeous. She's stunning. But I love that him running towards her and then stopping and being like, wait a minute. But I just had this amazing connection with this other person. Is this really what I want? And so he seems like he's holding back. In a way that in the animated movie, he was just like, oh, nope, this is the girl with the voice.
Yeah. And I think you articulated it very well earlier. Like when it comes to that moment for Eric, there is true confliction there. Like, I do think the film gives weight to that. I think it is earned. I really did appreciate that moment because we understand why he is drawn to that tune. And he's grateful that, you know, for being saved. And you know, we saw earlier that he's pulling out all the stops to try to find this person. So, yeah, I mean, even though the resolution or the, you know, the conflict that we get there, that is a little bit abrupt, which I'm perfectly okay with personally. But yeah, that moment of confliction, I think, is really good. And that comes through performatively as well as dramatically, I think.
And it was, and that it kind of continued that even after the, you know, the parents are invited, oh, we're so glad that he finally found you and everything. He's still a little holding back.
Yeah.
And I like, it gave him a lot of depth because the original Eric, God love him, pretty, but not the brightest. Not the greatest. Yeah. But he's pretty in the original one, so who cares? Sure. In this one, he's pretty and smart.
Exactly. Absolutely. And you make a great point too, that I think should be emphasized, because when people talk about Halle Bailey, you know, she certainly has the look down, at least I would argue that she does, and she can sing like no other. However, because of the nature of the character, and you were talking about some of the mannerisms that she has to deliver, and a lot of the facial acting that she has to do. That is also really important here. And I think she does a very, very good job with that. I agree. Like, there's a lot within their interactions where her eyes, her smile is doing so much of the heavy lifting. And she does a great job with that, as well as, again, through those mannerisms, embodying and reverberating that naivete in Ariel, because obviously this is all new to her. And she doesn't really know when some of the stuff that she thinks she knows, it's obviously not true. And so she taps into it with like this faux confidence, like with the fork in the hair, like she just goes for it and then quickly realizes, oh, that's not what it's supposed to be. But I love that kind of faux confidence in her and that naivete. It comes through very well.
And that sense of wonder.
And yes, in the sense of, oh, yes.
I imagine is very hard to portray. Yeah. Because she doesn't seem dim. She seems full of wonder, which is very different from blank.
Yes.
And, oh, yes. I just know what's going on. Because otherwise she would just be like wide-eyed and looking all over the place, where she would look a little creepy.
Yeah. And that's so important, too, because of one of the most iconic songs of this film. When she's talking, you know, when she's singing about wanting to go to the surface and be where the people are, like, we know that she has a sense of wonder just through the lyrics of that song. So when she finally gets there, it is important that that comes through in the character. And yeah, I could not agree more. That sense of wonder is palpable in her performance.
It's she was lovely. And the things that people, the ugly things that people have said just really upset me.
Yeah, I agree.
No reason. And I love not just that they kept her with the red hair, but I love how they had the texture of her hair.
Mm, yeah.
It was beautiful. They didn't make it straight.
Yeah.
She still had the same hair texture that would make sense for her character and for that actress. And
yes,
she was just so beautiful. And
I agree.
Something that made me really happy is, I'm not young, but all the people sitting behind me were young, but kids were actually cheering in the theater.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was so beautiful. And all different races of children clapping. They were dancing, literally dancing in the aisles. I almost cried. Yeah. I'm almost crying now. It was just this beautiful experience. And that's part of going to the movies. And
I agree.
Getting totally nostalgic. During the years of COVID, these kids didn't have that. And these are little kids.
Yeah.
And knowing that they get that magic too, and for such a movie that's so special, how wonderful is it? That's the beauty of movies, that they bring us together, that we share this experience together. And what a beautiful movie to share.
Oh, absolutely. I went to see this with my wife, and aside from us, it was mostly moms bringing their children, primarily little girls, to see the film. And it was really beautiful, and they were all into it. It was wonderful. So yeah, I mean, any of the criticisms that are directed toward Halle Bailey, it's all ridiculous. She was very well cast. As soon as you hear her sing, when you see that naivete, that sense of wonder, you'll know why she was cast as Ariel. She's fantastic.
Beautiful.
I did want to ask you about this though as well, because I know that one of the bigger talking points around not just this film, but all of these Disney remakes, is the visual style, the fact that they're using photorealism for especially the animal characters, and then we're hearing them talk. Was that jarring for you here? What did you think of that comparatively to something like The Lion King or The Jungle Book, for example?
The Jungle Book, for me, it seemed like a live action version of The Jungle Book more than Disney's original The Jungle Book. Yeah. So I was able to completely separate the two. With The Little Mermaid, it's harder just because personally I have such an emotional connection to this movie.
Sure. Yeah.
But, I think the animation style was beautiful. I think the way that they did the animals, and it is so magical. I thought Sebastian looked a little creepy though. His eyes kind of creeped me out a little bit. I don't know why, but it was.
Yeah.
But it seems very natural because it's such a movie that you really have to, not like any of them are realistic, let's be honest. But with The Jungle Book, it seemed like two completely separate things. It didn't seem like a live action version of the animated version. It just seemed like a live action The Jungle Book.
Yeah. And The Jungle Book. Oh, go ahead.
When you have some of those actors that are so iconic, and when you've watched it 150 million times like I have, not hearing, and it was hard, and Will Smith, before his fall from grace, taking over the role of the genie, which that takes guts.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because who is still not grieving the loss of Robin Williams? If you mention Robin Williams to anybody, everyone to this day is, my heart is broken. I'm still not entirely over. And we just talked about Cage last night on Women in Session, so everyone just a little shout out. But he was the genie, and so no one is gonna reach that. And I think my son loves the live action version because that's the first one that he saw. He saw it with his mom at the theater. He wasn't in seventh or eighth grade like I was when that movie came out. And then so in this one. In Little Mermaid, they didn't have anyone like that. They didn't have any big stars doing it. So it's easier to put other people in. But in The Jungle, I'm going to say, I mean, having anybody else, and I can't remember his name. I think his name is Phil. The guy who did Baloo. And he also did some, Little John in Phil Harris.
Yes.
Phil Harris. Okay, sorry. Trying to pull this off the top of my head. That voice is so iconic. They had Bill Murray do it, and Bill Murray's wonderful and I love him, but in your head when you're raised with these, it is a little bit like, wait a minute. And no one's gonna George Sanders as Shere Khan. I'm sorry, that's
I hear you.
And it changes, and when you have someone like George Sanders do it, Shere Khan's gonna have a certain attitude. That who did it in the live action? The Idris Elba?
I think so. I'd have to look it up, but I think you're right. Actually, now that you say that, I think that's right.
And it's scary and it's menacing and it's frightening. But again, those of us who know. But The Little Mermaid, I don't think suffers that same thing because they didn't have anybody that was identifiable in the original.
Yeah, I think that's very fair. And I do think you make a great point that a lot of this really comes down to casting and how that meshes with the visual layout of it, which I did not like in The Lion King. I don't know what it was, if it was the photorealism of it, if it was the performances, it could be all of the above. But The Lion King remake, I think, is as tepid as it gets. And that's me on the nice side of things when it comes to that film. I think in many respects, it's actively bad. However, I did like The Jungle Book. I thought the casting was mostly good. Scarlett Johansson, I don't know if she fit that film as well. But the rest of the cast I thought was fine. I thought the visual layout of it fit that world well. And here with The Little Mermaid, I don't know if it was the casting of Daveed Diggs and Awkwafina, but there's something about the playfulness of their performances that didn't necessarily carry a ton of weight in terms of the visuals and any sort of quote unquote photorealism they were going for. I didn't find that too distracting. The only character in this film that I might have been a little bit jarred by was was Jacob Tremblay as Flounder. And I love Jacob Tremblay, but I do think in terms of the animation of that fish, it was the most photorealistic of all of the characters. And, you know, so the mouth like barely moves and then they hear his voice come out. Because it was so much less playful as well, I was a little jarred by that. And to your point, as far as hearing certain actors and you think of them in certain roles, for me, when it comes to Jacob Tremblay, at least with voice animation, his performance in Room is different. He was really little when he did that. But in terms of voice animation, like, I can't separate his voice from Luca. I can't.
Yeah, no.
For me, he's Luca.
I couldn't identify his voice. Awkwafina, I was like, that's Awkwafina.
Yeah. Yeah, and maybe it's because I love Luca so much and I watched it, you know, countless times with my son. But like, I definitely recognize the voice and very much heard a Luca in the performance. And then you know, couple that with the photorealism that they're going for. It was a little jarring, but that he's not in the film all that much. So again, this is more of a talking point than it is an actual criticism.
And Flounder's also, it's such a boring character. He's there for plot purposes and to help move the plot forward.
Yeah, he's mostly just lingering.
He's just kind of supposed to be a little kid. So, and when you're talking about The Lion King, it's hard because The Lion King, the original was all based on voices. And so the live action one is so, it depends on the voices too, because you can't have any people in it. Yeah. And again, you are not going to get better than James Earl Jones.
Which they brought back, and honestly, it felt uninspired. And I love James Earl. His performance as Mufasa in the original, I think, is an all-timer.
Yeah, if you were
going to... he didn't seem like his heart was in it the second time around.
Winning it in.
Yeah, very much so. So, yeah, and the rest of, like, the whole film felt like that. They were just there for a paycheck and really nothing more. I did not sense that at all with The Little Mermaid. They were committed to their performances and what they wanted to achieve here. Certainly give it credit for that.
Joy. And I loved bringing in Eric's mother and the fact that he's adopted and all that.
Yeah, yeah.
It would seem, oh, this is stupid to give this character backstory. It's not. It adds to, and her fear of him leaving home and her fear of danger and, I almost said the underworld, the world under the sea.
Yeah.
And so at the end, when they're all together, the humans and the sea folk, it was really beautiful.
I agree. No, I like the backstory because it gives the two characters parallels. Like, again, we come to understand they come from the same place. They're yearning for very similar things, which I think makes sense of the romance in ways that's very effective here. And I agree, those final moments are affecting. I thought they were pretty poignant. So, All right, let's get to final thoughts. I'll toss it back to you. Do you have any concluding thoughts here on The Little Mermaid?
People should see this movie. If you love it and you're an old person like I am who saw it in the theater as a young child, you're still going to be enchanted. If you have kids, definitely take them to see it. There were kids, like I said, they actually cheered, and it wasn't just one or two kids. It was like every kid in the theater, and it was a lovely experience. Don't wait till it comes out on TV. Actually go and experience the real joy that this movie brings people, because it's special.
It is. No, I very much do agree. I urge people to go and see it. The only other thought that I have here, actually, I guess I have two final thoughts here real fast. And again, this is a slight deviation from you, Amy, but, and I'm not saying it's better than, don't get me wrong, I will be clear on that, but I really did like David Diggs here as Sebastian, even if it might not live up to its predecessor. I love the playfulness of David Diggs. I think he's very good with his comedic delivery here. And so I was really engaged with that performance. And I like how they updated, at least visually, his song that we get here, Under the Sea, another iconic song from this film. It, in some ways, it doesn't make sense given the lyrics of it. I will be fair on that. But in the way they visualize it, I mostly liked what they were doing there. And Diggs is having a lot of fun. So I didn't enjoy that.
He's a likable guy. He's one of the celebrities that I feel like if I ever saw him in real life, I'd really want him to give me a hug.
And he probably would. He seems like a good guy.
Because he seems like that kind of guy.
Yeah.
And I felt it's almost that at the end of the movie, I didn't know that that's who was voicing it. And it, when I saw that it was him, I actually felt a little guilty for thinking I don't like him as much as the original. I was like, oh, but it's David Diggs. Now I have to go back and completely rethink my opinion.
Yeah.
Would make me do that. Not many people would make me.
Not never. Yeah. 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 But, and similarly committed, very good with the comedy. And again, I think delivers on the song. And then my other final thought here, again, he mostly lingers in the background. There's not too much with him that's dissimilar from the original, the animated film, that is, anyway. And that's Javier Bardem as King Triton. I really liked his performance here. I think similarly taps into that conflict of, you know, wanting to protect Ariel and, you know, going all out in order to do that. And then what they give him there at the end, the scene with him near the boat, I thought was really great. I mean, that's you hire Javier Bardem for that moment almost specifically. And I think he delivers big time there.
He really does. And what an actor. I watched Lyle Crocodile a couple weeks ago.
Oh boy. Okay.
Charming.
Yeah.
And you know what? And I will also say this. I did not hate him in Being the Ricardos. Do I think he was worthy of an Oscar nomination? That's a different story, but I did not hate him in that. And I just, he really seemed like he was having fun. You could tell he loved being a sea king. And I love when the recognition that Ariel gives him of, you gave your life for me.
Yeah.
And then they have that. And I love that because at the end of the original, it's very much Ariel and Eric. But in this, it also focuses a little bit more on the relationship between her and her father. And they have that a couple of moments at the end when she realizes that he gave up for her. And then with Eric and his queen mother, that recognition of, you need to go out and you need to do what you do. And so it's them leaving, both of them are leaving their world with each other, and they both have a deeper understanding with their parents.
Yeah.
Cool.
Exactly. Yeah. No. I love how the film manages that here. So, on the whole, really liked it. Surprisingly liked it. I wasn't entirely sure what to expect because, like many out there. I wasn't entirely allured by the marketing. I don't think the trailers did the film a service necessarily, but it is good. Honestly, very good. One of the better films, maybe the best film thus far as these remakes go. Although I'm pretty high on Peach Dragon.
I very much agree. This one had a real, it had a real fire and passion to it, as opposed to seeming like, hey, let's just, how can we make money?
Yes. And that's honestly all I'm really like, show a little bit of inspiration, like have some sort of creativity instead of it just being a cash grab. This, I think, quintessentially does that well.
Very artistic. So. And everyone, also go back and watch the original if you haven't seen it. And if you really want to mess up your head, go read the original story by Hans Christian Andersen.
There you go. Yeah, that's something I'll have to do.
It is hard.
Well, Amy, thanks for being here. Really do appreciate you joining me for this conversation.
Thank you, sir.
Where can we find you on Twitter?
At A Thomason 11.
All right, yeah, be sure to go and give Amy a follow. You can see some of her work at InSessionFilm.com. And of course, you can hear her often on the Women in Session podcast that is released every Sunday-ish. I'm trying to be consistent at getting those shows out over the weekend. So be sure to go and check that out. Really loved the last podcast that went out, you guys did 90s teen comedies. I wasn't sure what to expect from that conversation because, like, I grew up in the 90s. I didn't really watch a lot of those films as they came out. I've seen a lot of them since then. And man, yeah, that conversation was honestly really great. It was one of my favorites you guys have done in recent weeks.
I'm so fortunate that I'm lucky enough to to get to talk every week with Kristen and Zita.
They're great. Yeah.
They're brilliant. They're funny. And I always say this about Zita. We differ in opinions quite frequently.
Oh yeah.
But I have such a respect for her, and she's one of the few people that she can make her points.
Very articulate. Yeah.
Even if I don't necessarily agree with it, she's one of the few people that can make me sit back and see a different perspective and really understand it.
Oh, I agree. And she's surprisingly very funny. Like, she has these quirks that, like, even in the middle of a serious sentence sometimes, she'll make a jab and I find myself laughing out loud.
And she has that charming accent.
Very much so, yeah.
Kristen and I did Tootsie and The Birdcage last night to kick off month. Yep. And we have one on Some Like It Hot, which should be coming up soon.
Yeah, I believe that's in 2 weeks. As of when this recording drops, I believe the next episode will be What Is the Greatest Decade of Cinema? Looking forward to hearing that.
We all have very interesting opinions on that.
All right. Well, definitely be on the lookout for that. Of course, you can subscribe to the podcast on Apple and Spotify and pretty much anywhere you can find podcasts. Stay tuned for that. Thanks, Amy, for being here. Really do appreciate it. Also, just want to plug one more time. Episode 536 is the latest main show podcast that we did. And that was where we did our power ranking of the Disney Renaissance era. And it was a great time. I had a lot of fun doing that. And if that's something that you enjoyed, we did the same thing on episode 532 for the golden and silver ages of Disney animation as well. So if you want to tackle those two episodes, you certainly can. With that, thanks for listening. Thanks for watching, everybody. If you're watching this on YouTube, be sure to subscribe, hit that like button. If you're listening to this, thanks for listening, everybody. You can drop a review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. We really do appreciate it. And then, of course, hit us up on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Let us know if you agree or disagree with anything Amy and I had to say here. With that, Amy, appreciate you. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next time on the In Session Film Podcast.